Good morning. Good to see you all. We've been thinking about this leading up to this year. There has been a lot of challenges and changes that happened for us, and especially in Australia, there's been a lot of challenges and changes to the society. And we had this in mind. We meant to do the Bible storytelling from last year, but we couldn't. We were running into a lot of things at the time. So God gave the opportunity again to be able to do it this time around. And then I'll tell you my perception on the same subject of the courage to resist. The idea of God versus authority has changed since we kind of wanted to talk about this. And reflecting on our life and some of the things Ryan said this morning about people's perception on things and how it's sad to see the back and forth hate that is being passed on through different things. My prayer and Kevin's prayer this morning was that God will speak to us through that. And I'm not a preacher, I'm a musician and a singer, but I'm good at raising questions. I think as a people of God today, you know, if you have a question after this, speak to Kevin. But I like to challenge us to think about the bigger picture of what and who we are. Because a lot of the time it's easy to be caught up in being front center of something and then feel intimidated by the situation. Okay, and I hope this message will be a message of encouragement for us today, this morning.
Thousands of years ago, there lived a man named Joseph. And during a famine in the land, God helped Joseph give very good advice to the king of Egypt to get Egypt through the famine. Because of this, when Joseph's extended family moved to Egypt, the king gave them a good part of the land to settle in. Generations passed, and Joseph's extended family grew and grew, and they became known as the Israelites. Years later, there was a king who knew nothing of Joseph or the good things that he had done for Egypt. He said, "Look at these Israelites. There are so many of them and they're so strong. We must do something about them. Let's make them our slaves and force them to do hard labor." So the Israelites had to work in their fields. They had to make their bricks and mortar. They had to build their cities for them. And the more alarmed the Egyptians became, the more ruthless they were. The more ruthless they were, the more children the Israelites seemed to have. The more children the Israelites had, the more alarmed the Egyptians became. The king said, "Bring me the Israelite midwives." When you are helping the Israelite women give birth, look closely. If it is a boy, kill him. The girls can live. But the midwives feared God. They knew how powerful God was, so they ignored the king and they let all the babies live. The king sent for the midwives again. "Why have you disobeyed me? I told you to kill those baby boys." "Us? Disobey you? Oh, no, no, no. It's not like that. You see, the Israelite women are so much more healthy and full of life. They give birth so quickly, we can't get there in time." So God was kind to the midwives, and the Israelites increased and became even more numerous. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them each families of their own.
I just want to start by talking to us all, and we can talk to each other in this. There's a question on the screen there, if you can see. What are some of the examples of oppression in the world? You can talk in the context of even the past or the present. If you want me to come to you with a mic, I can do that. If you thought about saying, so what are some of the examples of oppression when we think about today or in the past has been?
Slavery.
Yeah, slavery. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the context of the past or the present. But hey, it's amazing, isn't it? When you think about it, it's something that it meant to end many, many years ago, still continues in different forms or shapes. Yeah.
South Korea.
Sorry, North Korea. North Korea, sorry. Peter, sorry, Peter. Sorry. Sorry, Jin-ho, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, so that idea that one person would dominate people, and amazing, they have this amazing ability and power to manipulate everybody to do what they like to be done and continue to have that. So that some form of oppression still happens.
The persecutions of Christians in Iran and the disallowance of Christians' religious belief in Iran, they get persecuted and killed and executed. No church, nothing?
Yes. So all our brothers and sisters in Iran, in Syria, and in other countries, the Orthodox Egyptian are nearly 11 million people in Egypt, and they are called the minorities. 11 million people. That's just shy of half of the population of Australia. And they're called minorities. And the thing they go through, and the thing they go through in a daily life. So the Christians in Iraq and in other parts of the world, so people who are continuously subjected to oppression. Think about Danny. Yeah, poverty. So, and you want to talk a bit more about this? I don't want to read into what you're trying to say.
I don't know. The fact that we will always have poor in the Bible, Jesus says that, but the fact is they are oppressed, that because they are powerless, they don't have money or rich people, then yes, they don't. I don't know.
Okay. And it sounds like what Marianne is saying there is that people who are actually subjected to poverty, so are denied the resources, education, everything else to be able to get out of that poverty. And a lot of the time it's planned with, as you're saying, you know, rich people who have control over that and able to. So it is a continuous thing, isn't it? When you think about it, it continues with it. And especially as believers in church, a big part of church history is oppression. The people who are Paul. Yeah, that's the man who was actually in charge of this. And when people were killing Stephanos, he was there waiting for everybody's gear until the mission was done. And then, yeah, it became the greatest missionary. So it is. It is with us as church and people of God or people of faith that, oppression is a big part of this. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Anybody else before we move on? Yeah.
The erosion of right and wrong in our society is oppressing those who believe otherwise, who believe absolutes. And Brian mentioned earlier on about social media. Everyone on social media has the truth in their own eyes and is degrading what the absolute truth is.
Yes, and just adding into this is what we recently been through, the change to the Marriage Act, everything that was happening around that and how we felt the church leading into this and afterwards and how we felt. Now, we actually, there's not a lot of Christians in Australia, but we seems to be the threat everywhere we go. And it was the same thing. When I went to Cairo, the population of 104 million people, only nearly 10% of the population are Christians, but everybody's threatened by them. And they hold no power, but the power of prayer. So things like that is, you could see that the oppression is there. There's you know, that even what is happening in our society in Australia and the changes that are happening, But I'm wondering, just moving on to the next bit of it, the future. So you might like, as church, we have Sunday school, we have youth group, and we have our own families. How do we think that this oppression might take, which form? Or shape, what would that look like for the next church? Would it be similar in a way? Would it be, we talked about slavery and we said that something was in the past. And then hang on, we realized that it's actually not in the past. That something is still continuous and might continue into the future. And so when we think about the future of oppression and the church and our people and the people of Christ, what comes to your mind? If you, like, let's say if you're standing here, if you were to step into the future and give advice to the church in terms of the oppression, what would you say?
I was picked for that one. Well, I think that the Bible is very clear where the world is headed, and it is no surprise that it is going the way it is. But at the end of the day, when sin comes to the front and takes its seat in the thrones of men's hearts, that is what happens. But we are promised the future beyond what we can see in this current reality. And that future is what we as Christians hope for. But instead of being sort of despondent and in despair, living in despair and fear, we should strive to go out there and preach the word and do what is necessary to, you know, bring the lost sheep into the kingdom. And that is what God's will is for us. But looking at everything around us today, the future is going to get worse. Sorry to say. That's what the Bible tells us. But we have nothing to fear in that sense, because God has already won the victory, and we are promised a place, the future.
Thanks, SP, and I like that the role that we can play, it, what affects the future, and that I love that part, is the role that each one of us, each one of you sitting here, can play. And a lot of the time, we're caught up in being intimidated by the present moment, because we lose the sight of the bigger picture. Of what is that is. The world is already won. It was won. And I think that's back to the story of what happened. I think that back to the story of the midwives. But let's remember, and when I looked at this, you know, the idea is people who actually, over the centuries, people who challenge the people. And when I talk about the people, I'm talking about us here. People who challenge the people, or authorities who challenge the people, seems to be over the centuries challenging God. It was a direct challenge to God. And I guess just having a glimpse of that statement does really put the whole war and the whole oppression in a different context, doesn't it? You think totally different about it when you know that it's not about me right here in Sunnybank right now, or in whatever job that I do, or whatever family that I come from South Korea or North Korea. It's more that the people who are actually being challenged right now here in Southside International Church, people who are challenging them, they're challenging God. And I think we need to be aware of this. A lot of the time it is different when you are aware of that. It makes a difference. And this is actually what David said when he faced Goliath in 1 Samuel 17:47. I love wrestling. I love wrestling. People who know me know that I love wrestling. I do. I love wrestling. And yeah, my kids, my dad loved wrestling, so I love wrestling, and my kids are now picking up on it. So we love wrestling. That's right. So one of the things about wrestling, if you know a bit about Sudan, a lot of our tribes are wrestlers. We do run festivals of wrestling. Most of the tribe do wrestle. And that's the thing. It's a big, big thing that people do, still continue to do. And when I read that story in 1 Samuel 17 and how the tackle was, I read all the thing, and when David stepped up and come and talked to his brothers, and it was all the brothers like, what are you doing here? And, you know, I know you're just curious. You want to just see how the war is going and everything, and try to talk him down out of what he was trying to say. I loved when the, let me just read this. I think I love it. Let me just read that. The story. So, David spoke to Goliath. There was a bit of conversation before fighting, and people who watch wrestling know that it's always good to build up the scene and you know, to make the reasons for why you want to fight. And I think David has did this and has been doing it for a while. He spoke here with some group of people, tried to tell them, those guys are not going to do anything to us. How dare this Palestinian standing up and degrade the people of God? And his brother heard him and came and kind of talk him off of it, and he went to another group and he was telling things. So he's already started cheering himself up before he get into the fight. By the time he got and faced Goliath, the conversation ended with this: all those gathered here will know that it's not by sword or spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. It's an amazing statement. When you think about it, he was outside and about with the sheep, and then he was called in to send some food to his brothers, and this is how it is. Coming out of the picture was a totally different perspective. They've been sitting there scared of the Palestinian. If you read the story just earlier, they were very scared. They're very scared. But I guess having the idea, and that's what David did. The context for him was not just about defeating the Palestinian. It's more about, you know, actually you actually challenging God. You don't know. You don't know. Because what he actually said then, and if you read further in the story, he actually used exactly what Goliath said. Goliath said, I'll chop your head and I'll feed it to the birds and the beasts of the wild. David just used exactly the same description and just turned it around and say, well, you know what? God is actually going to give you to me, and that's what exactly I'm going to do to you. When you have the bigger picture, and a lot of the time we Christians, we are caught up in that very moment, and that's how I felt when the Marriage Act was actually, yeah, that's how I felt. I felt like, what's going on here? And so instead of thinking, actually they're challenging God, because that was his idea, I went to the mode of, okay, how I'm going to raise up my kids here? What do we need to do? Should we move to Africa? Should we do something? Do I need to move my kids to the Arabic school somewhere? Do I need to? You know, you kind of go into the mood of, especially us men, we try to fix the situation. And then when you do that, you kind of forget that. You get caught up in this hype of wanting to do something about the situation and not knowing that actually challenging the people is challenging God. I just want to read a little bit of the end here, since I said I love wrestling. So David prevailed over... Just go back a little bit from verse 48. So when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Palestinian. And a lot of the time we miss that. I think when we were faced with the idea of the Marriage Act was going to change and other issues that we might think of, the idea is we all felt that we kind of stepped back a little bit. We're caught up in the back foot. But when you read about the wrestling, what happened with David here was David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Palestinian. And then David put his hand in the bag and took out stone and slung it and struck the Palestinian on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the ground. A lot of the time we might think that we don't have the power to stand, or we might not be strong to do that. If you go back early in the story, Goliath even said, do you think I'm a dog that you're coming with a stick and a sling to do this? But you know, the story came to that even the stone played the role. The Bible says the stone is actually pushed itself in Goliath's head. So there's more to the picture than there's us, the people of God, who are oppressed. There's actually, remember that when people challenge you, they're challenging God himself.
So connecting this to the story of the midwives, so bring that back to your mind as you reflect on these pictures. We can see through that story of the midwives that their obedience far outweighed their fear of any consequences. So we see straight away in the story that they feared God. They're standing in front of this human king of Egypt who had all power over their people, who was enslaving their people with harsh labor, and yet their fear of the king of Egypt was here and their fear of God was here. And I think for us, when we're in the presence of a human authority or a human who has more power in a certain situation, our fear of God can shrink, and our fear of this human authority or powerful figure can increase. Whether that it could be a family member, it could be a friend even, It can be an employer, a lecturer, a teacher, a colleague, all manner of people in our lives could hold that greater position of power in a situation. And we can feel our fear of God shrinking and our fear of this human increasing. But these midwives, we can't imagine that they were really powerful people in their society. I wouldn't imagine that they held great positions of power or notoriety. They had an important role, and yet their fear of God remained large. As a result, they didn't waste time weighing up possible consequences. We don't see that in the story. We see an immediate obedience. And often for us, in the front of this human authority figure, we start to deliberate over consequences. What does this mean? So I want to obey what God commands, but at this point in time, this human authority figure is asking me to disobey God. And I'm starting to deliberate. What will that mean? Will I lose a job? Will I lose an opportunity? Will I lose a friendship? Will I be excluded from a friendship group? Will I be excluded from family? Will I miss a study opportunity, a research opportunity? What will I miss out on if I don't do what this person is asking me, even though that means disobeying God? But again, these midwives, we can't imagine that they're big and powerful, and yet they didn't seem to do that. Their obedience was immediate. We didn't see this deliberation over consequences. And as a result of their obedience, they had this great power. They had this power to keep these Israelite baby boys alive, for God to work his purposes through them. They equally had the power to kill the baby boys. But because of their obedience, they had the power to keep these Israelite baby boys alive at that time. Because of their obedience, and because God could fulfill his plan through them exercising their power, we see that God can fulfill his plan there. He also gave them great wisdom in their answer. We see that they weren't argumentative. They weren't attacking. The wisdom that God gave them to be so clever in their answer freed them to keep obeying God. And we all know that obeying God over obeying an authority who's asking us to go against God, we know that sometimes people experience very difficult consequences. We know that through history. We perhaps know it in our own lives. We know it when we hear of Christians in other countries. But in this instance, for the midwives, exercising that wisdom in their answer meant that, in fact, they didn't face consequences. They were blessed by God, and they were able to go on and have children of their own. So through this story of the midwives, we see that their fear of God was greater than the human authority figure, that they obeyed, they didn't deliberate over consequences. Through their obedience, they had the power to fulfill God's plan by keeping those baby boys at that time alive. And God was able to fulfill his plan through that. And God gave them wisdom in their answer. And through that, in this particular circumstance, they were blessed.
Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, and that was in the days of Herod the king, wise men came from far east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is it the king that was born? We saw his stars there in the east, and we came to worship him." And as soon as this news got to the palace, Herod was very disturbed, and so were everybody in Jerusalem. So he gathered all the high priests and the leaders of the people and asked them, "Where should be Christ was born? Where?" They said, "Bethlehem, Bethlehem." And they read what is written by the prophet, "La nakiya baytu lahm لست الصقرى بين رؤساء يهوذا لأن منك يخرج مدبر يرعى شعب إسرائيل. And that's meant, Bethlehem, you're not the least between the princes of Judah, because from you will come the governor who will rule Israel. So the king quickly met with the wise men and really figure out when was the stars appeared. And then he told them, okay, go and see, find that child and send me a word so I can go and worship him too. So the wise men left the palace and then they saw the stars leading them all the way to where Jesus was and Mary, his mom. And when they saw the child, they were very delighted and happy and they bowed down and worshiped him and they opened their treasures and gave him gifts. And as I was there thinking about going home, God warned them in a dream not to go back to the king. And so they find other ways to go back to their home. Just thinking about that story, one of the things that really struck me, this is one of the stories that I read all the time, every Christmas. But it's amazing how Bible storytelling does bring you inside the depth of the scenario of what's going on. And you think about some of the things that go in the story. One of the things that I noticed was that they actually came there with a clear statement. And a lot of the time, that clear statement brings disturbance around you. And I hear stories from the Hmong upstairs. And I come from a tribe and I understand this, is when you decide and come that you actually you're worshiping the king. You believe in Jesus. That's an issue. That's a big thing. And when those guys came to Jerusalem, the statement was, we've seen his stars in the east and we come to worship him. The Bible says Herod was disturbed, and not just Herod, but everybody in Jerusalem. I encourage you today, if you want to follow Jesus, guess what? Expect that everybody in your household, everybody in your community, all your friends will be disturbed. That's an automatic thing that has happened. And we hear stories of people who choose to follow Jesus and continuously pray for their families or their friends and all of that. That's what happened. It's amazing that will happen and noticing that. But so they have a clear mission of following God. And a lot of the time back into the idea of oppression and how we as Christians, a lot of the time intimidated by that. Having a clear mission of who am I worshiping in this? Who's Jesus? Who am I representing in the middle of all of that? Those guys had an amazing boldness in how they said this statement. And they probably were shocked by the reaction. And when they were told in a dream not to go back, they probably picked up on some of the things that people say because they made that statement earlier and they noticed how people reacted. And then they kind of, when God said, okay, don't go back to the king, it was an easy thing to do because they've already noticed the situation around. One of the things about obedience, and that's one of the things I kind of see God speaking to me through that story, was that obedience is not, and its impact on the events within God's plan. So God has a plan. But if you go further in the story of the wise men, you find out that they were told not to go back. They chose to go a different way. Herod discovered that he was deceived. But in between them choosing to go a different way, Herod discovering that he was deceived, the angel appeared to Joseph and said, you know what, take the kid and go to Egypt because this man wants to harm the child. So that sequence of events and how it is connected. So what I want to encourage you this morning is you are here in this church. Don't think like you're just a number in the congregation of Southside International Church. Let me encourage you that everything that you do, your obedience to God, play a big role in this big plan of salvation, big plans of people being saved, big plan of people hearing the good news of Jesus Christ. That's how things fall in place. We have to believe. We have to pray for this building here. We have to act as if we're already in the building. We have to pay somebody. We have to, change the plan. We have to talk to the city council. We have to do all of those things in part of the obedience, the bigger picture of what God's plan is. And that fits with everything else that we do as us inside International Church is, don't feel like you're just a number that comes in here every Sunday. You, what you're doing does really affect what God is doing in this part of the world and in other parts of the world. And I'm sure the people who went to Africa will kind of tell you exactly the same thing. We're just here sitting in this center, but our obedience does actually change people's life and bring people closer to God. So I and God have that mission, and don't expect that when you make the statement that you're following God, there's going to be reactions. But remember that your obedience as part of this is actually part of God's plan falling in sequences and falling in place. I just want to finish with a question. And as I said earlier on, we and my wife, even though she went to Bible college, she considered herself not a preacher, so same as me. We want to finish with questions. I want to just raise some questions and want us to think about it. And you could, I look at questions as prayer points. So if you will, let's look at this question. How can our fear of God motivate us to obey and give us courage? I just want to give a bit of a silent time. You know, think about this. And even if you want to pray for that, and just how can our fear of God motivate us to obey and give us courage to face whatever situation that we face? How does that happen? How would that happen with your situations when you are the only Christian at your workplace? Or even in your home? Or if you're surrounded by people that, don't really believe in God, how can your fear of God motivate you to be the light in the midst of all of that without feeling intimidated? How can our fear of God motivate us to want to reach out, what SP was saying, wanting to reach out to those people who don't know God and bring them more closer to God?
As you're reflecting on this question, we're going to say our two stories as we finish. We'll say our two stories one last time, and then we'll pray through a Bible passage. So as we tell the two Bible stories again, how can our fear of God motivate us to obey and give us courage? As you listen to the two Bible stories again, what do you learn about God and what do you learn about people? Thousands of years ago, there lived a man named Joseph. During a famine, God helped him give good advice to the king of Egypt so that Egypt could get through the famine. Because of this, when Joseph's extended family moved to Egypt, the king gave them a good part of the land to settle in. Generations passed and Joseph's extended family grew and grew, and they became known as the Israelites. Years later, there was a king who knew nothing of Joseph or the good things that he had done for Egypt. He said, "Look at these Israelites. There's so many of them and they're so powerful. We must do something about them. Let's enslave them and make them do all our hard labor." So the Israelites had to work in their fields. They had to make their bricks and mortar and build their cities for them. The more alarmed the Egyptians became, the more ruthless they were. The more ruthless they were, the more children the Israelites seemed to have. The more children they had, the more alarmed the Egyptians became. The king said, the king sent for the Israelite midwives. "When you go to help the Israelite women give birth, watch closely. If it is a boy, kill him. The girls can live." But the midwives feared God. They knew how powerful he was. So they ignored the king and they let all the babies live. So the king sent for them again. "Why have you disobeyed me? I told you to kill the baby boys." "Us? Disobey you? Oh, no, it's not like that. You see, the Israelite women are just so much more healthy and full of life. They give birth so quickly, we can't get there in time." So God was kind to the midwives, and the Israelites increased and their numbers grew even more. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them each a family of their own.
Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, in Judea, and that was in the days of Herod the king, wise men came from the far east to Jerusalem, asking, where was the king meant to be born, the new king? And the news of this reached the palace, and Herod was very angry and disturbed. So he gathered all the priests, high priests and the leaders of the people, and asked them, where should Christ be born? And they said, Bethlehem. Bethlehem. لأنك لست سقرا بين بيوت يهوذا لأن منك يخرج ملك يرعى شعب إسرائيل. Bethlehem, you're not the least between the princes of Judah, because out of you will come the governor who will rule my people Israel. So he sat with the wise men and asked him and investigated when they saw the star. And afterwards he said to them, okay, go and see the child, and when you find him, send me a word so I can also go and worship him. They left the palace, and here the star that they saw in the east leading them all the way to where the child Jesus was and his mother Mary. So when they saw the child, they were overwhelmed with joy, and they bowed down and worshiped him. And they opened their treasures and gave out great gifts. And as they were thinking about going home, they were warned in a dream not to go back to the king. And so they took a different way to their home.
We'll read this Bible verse as our closing prayer. In fact, this is love for God, to keep his commands. And his commands are not burdensome, for everyone born of God overcomes the world. This is the victory that has overcome the world, even our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world? Only the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God.